You don't need another report. Bleeding green till I D.I.E. Hold it down for the best team. We in first place, we the Celtics. Try to shoot it, we ain't let ya. Finna going when it rain. Giving fades like I'm Kyrie. You the opposition, can't score yet. Homie, you ain't even on the floor yet. Big buckets and big shots. Better check the time on the shot clock. Got my shooters on me, they wet you up. It's a 30-footer, I ain't letting up. Scary Terry with the dancing bear. Gonna light it up like it ain't fair. Dunk it on you like Rozier. Fourth quarter, we in fifth gear. I got Tatum, I got Brown. I got Marcus locking you down. Grab a broom, it's a sweep. Score 100 on our feet. Celtics pulse, we the team. And we don't accept defeat, yeah.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to another episode of Celtics Pulse, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. Be sure to check out the PulsePodcastNetwork.com for the rest of the great podcasts that we have on there. And there is also an app that is titled the same thing, the Pulse Podcast Network, available on the iTunes Store, Google Play Store, and everywhere else. Be sure to download that, guys. A quick and easy way to listen to the Celtics Pulse Podcast and the other great podcasts that we have on the network. Also, be sure to check out Thrive Fantasy. They are a new fantasy app, and if you sign up with the link in our bio of this episode, they will double your first deposit. Again, that is Thrive Fantasy. Today, we have a very special episode with me, Brendan, Derek, and a special guest that is going to be Jared West, the Celtics cover for The Athletic. We will cover everything from the recent struggles and altercations that you've seen with the Celtics, Marcus Morris, Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving upset after the Magic game, Jason Tatum trade rumors saying he would give himself up for Anthony Davis and what we actually would give up for Anthony Davis, Terry Rozier needing to be shopped, and much more. I do want to apologize in advance for the quality at times of this podcast. Jared was kind enough to talk to us, but it was during a car ride, and you can hear he had some troubles.
There's a cop freaking out in front of me, and I can't tell what's going on. Don't ever drive through Boston, but while doing a podcast. Sorry, I almost got into a serious car accident. 1 second. If anyone's familiar with 93 north of Boston, it's like not... Fury Road. Literally almost got run off the road there. Now there's a guy running out of the middle of the street. There's an old lady with a basket full of groceries walking in front of my car and won't get out of the way. I don't know what's going on. I'm pulling over for the rest of this podcast. I'm tired of having this good conversation interrupted by the law.
But it was a great conversation. Like I said, thank you very much to Jared for taking time out of his busy schedule to hop on the Celtics Pulse podcast. Be sure to give him a follow on Twitter at JaredWessNBA and enjoy the conversation.
There's something specifically that happened with Terry, but besides just like mediocre play, which has been an issue
while. Yeah, it was really that. He was minus 20 for the game, plus minus, and just was when he was in there, was just going into like prime Kobe mode. Just
okay. Yeah, which okay. So yeah, I saw that stuff. And I mean, you know, I've talked to so many people in the organization about. When people say guys have to adjust to their role, what does that really mean? You know, because we're hearing Kyrie saying it, we're hearing a lot of guys saying it, and it's kind of like the team message is guys are learning how to adjust to their role. And basically that is targeting Tatum, Brown, and Rozier, the three guys that were thrust into the spotlight last year, to take a step back and you know, it's like they're running a lot of the same actions for them. The big difference is just that, one, they don't get as much frequency and as much latitude as they had last year. And last year, they were taking, you know, they were the guys using most of the possessions throughout the game. So they had time to establish themselves, develop a rhythm. They were getting like, I mean, at least in Rozier's case, he was getting almost twice as many minutes last year. I mean, he's getting right under 20 or so this year, I think, and then I'm in the car, so I can't look it up, but looking at the NBA stats I have stored in my brain, playing like around 20 minutes, while last year he was playing probably 33 to 34 minutes, like in the playoffs, so it's like pretty much like half of the time that he got last year. And last year you really saw that he had time to kind of develop his rhythm out there and to, you know, run a bunch of plays where he's not trying to gun it. He's trying to let the play see his way through. He eventually was getting his shots, especially because of transition and defense. He would get stops. He would get him easy buckets. He would be able to trail and bury a three in transition, stuff like that, that he just doesn't see nearly as much anymore because, one, the team that he's the defense that he's out there with isn't nearly as good as the defense that he was with when he was with the starters, in that he just didn't have, like, simply ties of possession. And it's not working for him, because I think also his shot just has been a little bit off this year. It's not, I mean, he wasn't great statistically last year. Like, I think his shooting numbers were, he was shooting around like 43%. It wasn't shooting that well from three, but he was a high energy guy, and he was able to get a lot of shots up. So in aggregate, he was getting a lot of points. And so I think he's feeling that pressure. For some reason, they haven't figured it out halfway through the year. I think they figured it out with Jaylen for the most part. Tatum has kind of figured it out. Terry seems to be the one guy on the roster that it's still a complete mystery. So I guess the point I'm making is that when the guys say they're, you know, adjusting to a new role, I think that Rozier's just like that one guy that, what, like, for all those other guys, they were able to build plays and actions and put them in spots that really work for them. While with Terry, he just needed time out there, and he just doesn't have that anymore. And so I've been trying to figure out a solution for him, and I just haven't seen it.
I think the trade scenario makes the most sense for me, because, as you had mentioned, he's used to now play, well, not used to, but last year he played 30 to 35 minutes a night on a very good team. And he's shown that when he does start, he's pretty capable. So, you know, with his, again, being a free agent this year, he's probably gone anyways. And, you know, Kyrie has mentioned more than once that he wants some veteran help. So you've kind of got, saying I want to trade Terry is not even a knock on Terry. It's almost kind of complimentary, where he deserves to start somewhere. And why not try to get Kyrie some of the help that he's asking for? You know, I know that kind of sounds like, you know, everyone gets on LeBron all the time. How much help does he need? But, you know, the team is, you know, right now has lost back-to-back games. Orlando, and they're, what are they, the 5 seed now? So they can improve. And I think adding a veteran in shopping Terry now would be the way to go about it.
Well, the issue there is that if you're Danny Ainge and Kyrie comes into your office and says that, which he's not, I mean,
sure.
I don't think Danny would act on that, and I don't think Kyrie would do that. But Kyrie says that, and Danny says to him, okay, I want you to sign this contract now. Because Kyrie says he's going to stay in Boston, but a lot of things can happen. And it seems like New York is still in play, especially if Kevin Durant ends up going there, which is a real possibility. And so Terry is a very important insurance policy against that. An insurance policy that has lost a ton of value because people aren't holding on. Celtics fans are probably holding on to the hope of what they saw from Terry last year, but opposing GMs are not going to value that sample nearly as much as the people that have the bias or the Celtics are. So I think that teams definitely still value Rozier and think that he's a good trade target, but it's not like the return that you could get for him now probably pales in comparison to what they could have gotten in the offseason.
I agree with totally that. He's definitely shot his trade value, but it's kind of a double-edged sword here. If you're Kyrie and you've got the free agency and you know that they could have improved the team by moving on from your backup point guard who's young and deserves to start but didn't,
that's kind of got to... You're making a fair point, but I'll take my reputation on that not being the reason why he would decide to leave. Like, he's not an idiot. Not to mention, he and Terry have been really... Like, Terry's been like his little bro. I mean, Terry literally called Kyrie his big bro. He literally stole all of Kyrie's shoes, so he owes Kyrie shoes anyway. So, I don't think that would... Like, Kyrie trusts the team-building process here a lot, and he should. And so when I say here, I mean Boston. But so, you know, compared to where he was in Cleveland, where ownership interfered so much with the team-building process, you're seeing here that Danny, who, one, is renowned as probably the best... are just about the best talent evaluator in the game, and has had such a remarkable, you know, track record of showing that patience eventually opens up the opportunity to make the best move possible, although he's also missed on a few opportunities. So, you know, there's some stuff like that. But I don't think that this would have any impact on Kyrie's decision. I think Kyrie's decision is going to be whether he thinks that this is the best opportunity for him to grow and for them to develop into a championship team. And I'm not really seeing any other franchises emerging as that potential suitor, except for like the Clippers, which I've heard that he's not going to be an LA guy, and would it make sense for him to do that? And the Knicks, who just don't have, unless they get KD on board first, they can carve out a second slot, which is unlikely. They're just not going to, I don't think they can put nearly as good of a sales pitch to Kyrie as a Boston can. And then there's also Brooklyn. Brooklyn, same situation.
Yeah, I mean, Kyrie's complaining about the young guys now, and to try to sell him on New York or New Jersey, which are even younger team, that just wouldn't make sense to me. But, you know, if KD and then they maybe make a move for a third guy as well, that could change things. But I think if Kyrie stays healthy and, you know, doesn't have another knee issue come March, you know, knock on wood, you know, March, you know, April, May, June, et cetera. I think when he said he's going to resign to the crowd, I don't think he was, you know, bullshitting.
I think he meant it. It's just that he has to go through a whole season without that commitment signed and see what could go wrong. And things have gone wrong. They're not nearly as good as he thought they would be on the day that he announced that. But I mean, for him to go back on that would be, he has a very shaky reputation. As great as it is definitely on very thin standing. And if he were to go back on his word like that, I mean, hell, if I'm the team trying to sign him, even I would be a little bit nervous. But, I mean, at least they would have the contract, so they wouldn't have to worry for a couple of years.
Yeah. Kyrie in postgame yesterday was saying a lot about how it was different in Cleveland since everyone was a little bit more of a veteran, and it was the oldest team in the league at the time. Everyone really realized this was a lot of their last chances to win a championship, so it was just a different vibe day in and day out. And these young guys have a, he was saying, you know, 10 to 13 year window almost that they feel like they are going to have this opportunity, and they just need experience. And they've showed bright spots that they have the capabilities throughout the year, but they've also had these very down ones with a couple bad losses like the last night to Orlando. Do these games almost just work towards getting that experience? And obviously, there's frustrations immediately after, but are they just going to lead to good things, you feel like?
Yeah, well, what's crazy about it is that I think they're the team, you know, most of these young teams that build through the draft and develop a young core, they usually get, they sneak into the playoffs, they get knocked out in the first year, then they make it to like the second round, then they make it to the conference finals, then they make it to the finals. And the Warriors kind of went that path. OKC went that path. Those are like the two comparable teams that built up with like three or four really good young players. And so Boston is going through that process. However, they've made the conference finals 2 years in a row now, right? So it's kind of crazy how that's worked out. And I think that the way that this team looks at developmental stage, they look like they're at the point where they would get to the conference finals and be competitive. But they already did that last year. Maybe that was a product of the East being weak. I think the top teams in the East are a lot better this year than they were last year. And so, you know, for Kyrie, Kyrie's leadership right now is reminding me a lot. I mean, here, guess who you think, who I think he's reminding me of right now is his leadership style.
Are you going to say IG? Ryan?
No. It's LeBron? Yeah. He's pulling a LeBron right now. He's learning.
I need help.
Everyone who thought that he hated LeBron and he like hated that LeBron, like looked down at whatever, all that BS. Like he's said a few times that like he was learning from LeBron, but also he wanted to develop his own thing, and which ironically LeBron ended up doing the same. But he's pulling a straight LeBron right now, where he's calling out the team in January. This is what LeBron did every goddamn year in Cleveland. I was there last year when he did this exact thing, where he was calling out the team. And like calling all these different guys out, saying like our young guys got to catch up, our older guys got to play better defense, we got to be more cohesive. And then as soon as the presser was over, he turned to like a couple of us to be like, I always flip the switch. I'm going to flip the switch. Don't worry about it. And you know, I don't think Kyrie was certainly doing that to the side, but you know, Kyrie's trying to do what I think has been a pretty effective leadership style from LeBron, which is obviously potentially alienating. Except LeBron is so great that all the guys there in the locker room were like, you know what, as pissed off as we might get once in a while, and as frustrating of the uncertainty that we have for the future with LeBron, with the way that he did the one-to-one deals, we are so unbelievably lucky to be in that position that we can, you know, we can do our roles, and then LeBron is going to carry us to the finals. And those guys are on board. Kyrie needs to perform at that level for everyone to reluctantly be on board with that. And to Kyrie's credit, he seems to work really hard at maintaining these relationships with all these guys as well. And I haven't heard anything hinting at guys being pissed off or tired or worn out by the message that Kyrie is delivering. Sure, they're annoyed as hell by it, but I don't think they're taking it personally to the point that it ruins their relationship with Kyrie and they lose their trust in Kyrie. But, you know, Kyrie, I think so far has been performing at that level. He's been a borderline MVP candidate. Frankly, I think he'd be a stronger MVP candidate if the MVP race wasn't so insanely good this year. You know, but he's been playing amazing. And he's had a few down nights, and he also has some mediocre defensive performances that people see him trying on defense and taking charges, and they actually miss the more important stuff on defense about getting matchups right, not letting your guy get past you, that stuff that he still is mediocre, I would say. But he needs to continue to be consistent on his end so that his message can continue to be legitimate and resonate. And I think that's how he doesn't lose the locker room, and that's how Terry Rozier can continue to have the potential to turn things around.
Yeah, well, to piggyback off that, did you see the clip at the end of the game where Kyrie got in Gordon's face about the play at the end of the game?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting. I've been talking a lot. If you want to say something, go first.
I wanted to make sure you saw it first, because I know you said you were at another game, it did go quite viral, so I assumed you had. Do you think that is frustration starting to boil over? Because, as you mentioned, whether we want to, you know, the whole thing here is to stay calm, but also you got to recognize they're underachieving. So do you think that this is like becoming a thing, or do you think it's just that one play and then losing to a team that they shouldn't have lost to, it was just in the moment?
I think it's a little bit of a thing. You know, Stevens and all of them are trying to minimize it. The confrontation is certainly an issue when it happens. It happens all the time. It happens a lot behind closed doors. I just heard a story today from someone who told me a story about a coach who is known for having a very productive but tense relationship with a player, where a player like said something that pissed him off and he threw him out of practice, literally kicked him out of the building. And then the guy came back and ended up playing great, and you know, things worked out. And that's how things tend to be with great players. So with Kyrie, I'd say the one thing that he maybe oversteps on, well, there's probably a lot, but one thing I think is notable is that he thinks that he should be a focal point of the final play of the game in the game-winning play situation, which his track record earns him that. He's been one of the best.
Definitely.
And it's important to recognize that, especially with someone like Stevens, who crafts really good, very good, quick-working ATOs, is that he is going to use the best player as a decoy a lot of the time. And on that play, usually how it's run, and I think I'll give credit to Brian Robb from Boston Sports Journal. I saw that he wrote an article about it. I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure he has everything laid out properly. That play is one that they used to run with Isaiah a couple times, and they ran it with Kyrie once, and it didn't work. I think it was last season. I can't remember where. But Kyrie starts all the way out in the backcourt, basically does like a full sprint forward. The inbound goes to Al Horford at the top of the key. Horford has the option to hand it off to Kyrie, or he can play off of a fake handoff to Kyrie and kick it to an open shooter. But instead of Hayward inbounding it to Horford, he inbounded it to Tatum, who was kind of curling into the corner near him. And Tatum takes like a really difficult contested turnaround jump shot that didn't really have that good of a chance, even though that's a shot that's in his arsenal. So Hayward, after the game, was saying, because I didn't get to see the way that Hayward said it, but the way Hayward was saying it seemed like he was saying, I don't know what Kyrie was so upset about. I hit one of the two options that we have to inbound on that play, and it didn't work out. That was a choice I made. And I think from Kyrie's perspective, he's thinking, I was ready to execute that, and we would have pulled it off, but you bailed out of it too quickly, and you should have been more patient. So I don't think Kyrie's like, God damn it, Gordon Hayward, why can't you just do anything right for once? Kyrie was simply frustrated because he thought they were going to win the game on that play because he thought he was going to pull it off. And so he was really pissed off in that moment. But Kyrie also has been super supportive of Hayward's increasing performance as a playmaker that we've seen over the past month and a half or so, where he's starting to really get into that rhythm, and it's taking a lot of pressure off of Kyrie. And it's made the offense more consistent. It's one of the big reasons why their offensive rating has shown up, besides that one game against Chicago.
Yeah, so to transition off that, you'd mentioned Gordon Hayward. He's been coming off the bench now effectively for, you know, about, does it seem like a month or so? Do you think that continues when we're talking playoff time? Do you think this is the starting lineup? Or do you think they're kind of eventually going to try to work him into the starting five?
It's a great question. It's the hard, I think that and the Rozier question are the two hardest things to answer at this point.
I know.
They're really damn good with the Marcuses in the starting lineup. They have a great balance.
Couldn't agree more, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I want to know what you guys think, but like the Marcuses, okay, Marcus Morris, the way that he's shooting and this physicality he's providing a lot of the offensive role that Jaylen Brown usually serves. So he's kind of been like what Jaylen was doing for them last year. Not as good in transition as Jaylen, but it hasn't seemed to matter too much. And then Smart does kind of what Gordon Hayward does, where he's a playmaker. He can run pick and roll. He's got a lot of defensive versatility. He can play the four or even the five when they need him to, which were the things that Hayward was supposed to be doing. And his shot has been like pretty decent lately. He's been shooting like in the high 30s, to low 40s from three.
He's been on fire. Yeah, he's been like 45% for the past like 2 weeks or something. Like, and just been, he's been lethal. So I actually agree. I think you were leaning towards keeping the two Marcuses in there. Not to, you know, assume what you were going with that, but if that's where you were going, it's tough to take Morris out right now with him being the most consistent Celtic. To me, he's been the most consistent. I mean, Kyrie, you know, because he did miss a little time when he was banged up. Not a ton, but I mean, just Marcus has just been very efficient. And he's one of the few guys, I don't know if Jaylen can as much, but he can create his own shot. So, and Smart just is the perfect complement to Kyrie, in my opinion. You know, defensively, gets Kyrie off the ball offensively. So, you know, if I think having a super six man like Gordon is, you know, it's a good problem. But I think for now, I would, again, I might change my opinion, you know, in a month. Like you said, it's a tough question. But I think for now, you got to stick with this five. And they are, you know, what are they like? Up until this two-game losing streak, they were on quite a roll. So, you know, I guess you got to see. What do you think, Brendan?
I feel like a lot of it has more so to do with who is closing rather than starting the game. I think it has an effect on some of the guys. Like, I think Jaylen, a lot of his issues are confidence. So maybe, you know, inserting him into that starting lineup does a lot for him, but he hasn't put up the play on that level. Like you said, Marcus Morris has really taken that spot from him and done everything that we would want from him a little better. But when it comes to closing is where I feel like it matters a little more. And we're seeing Gordon get some of those minutes at the end. And yeah, in regards to Jaylen, you don't really see him there. And you kind of see him swap Kyrie and Marcus, depending on what we need there, defense or offense. So I think it's definitely a good problem to have, but you're going to slowly see, I feel like, Hayward get a little more minutes towards the end of the game like you already have, whether that mean Morris sit a little more, because I don't think Morris is part of the long-term plan since we're not going to be able to keep him in the future.
And, you know, an important thing to think about is, and I don't really know the right answer here, but there's so much focus on restoring that starting lineup because that's the lineup of the future with Brown and Hayward in there. But they don't necessarily have to do that. They can finish the season and try to get as far as they can with the Marcuses in the starting lineup and then reconfigure and try it again next year. It would definitely seem to bode poorly for the future of that lineup working, but they don't have to make it happen this year. And I really do think like Jaylen and Hayward were the two guys that were hurt for most of the first half of the season. I mean, Hayward, not like he's not injured, but like he's slowly building himself physically back up. We're seeing a lot of signs of progress at this point, which is what I said would happen after Christmas. I think we're starting to see it now. And then with Jaylen, I mean, Jaylen had foot soreness that was really bothering him early in the year. He's had a wrist injury on his shooting hand that's been bothering him all year. He has to wear this like volleyball pad on his wrist, and he hates it. Like, he hates shooting with it. It screws up his shot. Yeah, I was watching him doing a shootout in practice where he, like, ripped the pad off. He's like, this goddamn pad's pissing me off. So I think those are the biggest reasons why his shooting has been, you know, mediocre this year. And then the foot thing explains why he had trouble attacking the rim and elevating, getting lift, which is ironic because I think we saw a lot of plays where he did get great lift. They're like that dunk he had over Joel Embiid, which Embiid blocked on opening night. Like, since the beginning of the year, like, he's been able to get up there, but there clearly has been some sort of issue with that foot that's been affecting him. And so I think I think it seems like he's relatively healthy now. He's managing the rest to the point that he's become better shooters and get back in and bury it. And you can count on him to shoot 3-for-7, 4-for-7 from deep in most of these games, and that was huge. And just right now, he's not having that. So he's trying to figure out ways for him to be impactful, and that's been really hard for him.
Yeah, and a lot less is open for him when he's not hitting his shot, since so much of his offensive firepower comes from getting to the rim, and if the guys aren't respecting your shot as much, it's obviously a lot more difficult for you to blow by them. And that's where I felt like a lot of the Celtics' issues have been this year, of not hitting the paint. They're not getting those free throws. They're 29th in free throw attempts, and they're 28th in attempts 0 to 3 free from the basket. And I just feel like nobody's hitting the paint, and that would get your shooters open a little more. I'm happy that we're shooting a lot of threes, being third in the league, but I feel like we need to be getting into the paint a little more.
I asked Brad about, you know, free throw rate and how they measure what they consider to be good offense for getting in there and creating penetration. You know, I think that free throw rate is most importantly an indicator for how are you stretching out the defense, because, you know, there's two ways you can stretch a defense. You can stretch them horizontally and you can stretch them vertically. So horizontally is that you have shooters on each side of the paint, on the perimeter. Horizontal is you have shooters on both sides. The defense is scared to send over guys whenever you attack from one side, because you'll pop it out to the guy on the weak side, buries a three. But vertical stretching, I think, is almost more important, which is that you're able to get the ball deep into the paint, and then they have to collapse guys from the top. That opens up everything, basically. So what they've been trying to do to get that to where they want it is they're running more pick and roll now. So they're using Daniel Tice. They're using Aaron Baines. The Time Lord is doing it even. Even Horford a little bit is doing it, where they're trying to run pick and roll, because when that big guy shoots down the lane, that forces usually an extra defender to come in, and that's how you get that, rather than doing pick and pop, where you're trying to allow the ball handler to get in there and attack a space area. With the big man crashing through, the ball handler can kind of just ride his coattails into the paint, and then you get to your open shooter. So they're trying to do it that way. It doesn't solve the fact that none of their guys this year have been good at getting all the way to the rim, but it's one solution to try to get those paint touches up and therefore open up the shooters, so you're getting actual good shots or easier lanes to attack.
And to go off of that, you had mentioned Time Lord. I mean, you know, a lot of fans that I've seen commenting lately have been wanting to see him get some more minutes, especially with Baines being out. I thought he would get more run, and he really hasn't. And, you know, his numbers per 36 are very impressive. They're like 12, 12 and six blocks, you know, per 36. So he's clearly produces when he's in there. So do you think it's just Brad not trusting the rookie, or what do you think the story is there? Have you heard anything?
No, I haven't heard anything negative. I think, I think it's been talked about. I think Brad has addressed it publicly, in that Rob's ability to defend the rim is incredible and something that they haven't really had in a long time. Baines is really good at protecting the rim, but it's in a different way than what Rob does. But Rob, he can't really shoot from outside of, right now he's not shooting really outside of the paint. In fact, I don't know, has he had a non-dunk field goal at this point? I mean, he had it for a while. I think that trend is still going, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, there's that. He's limited in what he can do offensively. And then defensively, he's still learning how to defend pick and roll. He's actually a lot better than he was at the beginning of the year, or rather in summer league. Like, he's definitely grown. He's learning defense. But Tice is just a much more consistent all-around player. He's able to operate pretty much everywhere on the court. And, you know, there's just some games where, because he's kind of a below-average athlete, he's just going to get picked apart by some superior athletes. Yeah, you know, he's a little undersized. He's got, like, a decent vertical, but nothing special. He's not super powerful, but he's strong enough. He's a very, very simple backup big man, basically. But he does everything really well, and he loves his role. And so he's a perfect fit for it. So I think it's simply just that Rob right now, with Baines out, is just third in the depth chart for bigs. So it means he's not going to get a ton of minutes. But he seems to be ahead of Yabu in the depth chart, which is really bad for Yabu, whose option was picked up next year. But it shows that Yabu doesn't really have a future here unless something turns around for him.
Yeah, so my guess, they guarantee you, you know, pick up that salary next year as if just to have a trade chip to match anything.
I agree.
Which, you know, we all we love, you know, the off season is just as exciting sometimes as the regular season.
Especially
when you have traded Danny and three first round picks. So this will be it'll be entertaining. But just a simple question here. Are the Celtics still the best team in the East, do you think? I mean, because
no.
I mean, right now, the way it lined up, in the second round, we're going to either get Toronto or Milwaukee, I think pretty much guaranteed. Unless I don't see them getting either one of them getting upset in the first round. So, I mean, do you think we're going to be underdogs in the second round?
Sure. Yeah. At this point, it seems like it. I mean, there's still so much time. We're only halfway through the season, yeah. So there's still a ton of time for it to change. I mean, look at what Philly did last year. Philly wasn't really even that great until like right at the end of the season. All of a sudden, they exploded. So, you know, Boston can figure this out at any point. I mean, they can figure it out on the last day of the regular season, and if they do, they're maybe the best team in the East right away. I mean, it's not like, you know, it actually, that'd be great because then nobody would have film to study of what they were doing right. So maybe that's what Stevens is doing. He wants them to pretend to suck the entire year, and then on the last day of the regular season, they're going to win by like 80 points, and then he's going to start going off. So we'll see if that happens. But, I mean, you know, Toronto has been pretty up and down for the last couple of weeks. But they're so good. I mean, just Kawhi, it's been so obvious to see that. They had a really good team that they put together last year, and then they put in Kawhi, who's a better version of DeRozan, although DeRozan's been really good this year, so give him credit. But Kawhi, I think, is at a different level. Everyone seems to agree with that.
Yeah.
And they have gone to that next level. And it's not even like, I don't think you can even really quantify how they've done it. It's just like they're clearly better. And Siakam has just turned into...
I was just going to say, Pascal is unbelievable.
Practically an all-star.
It's been shocking. Yeah. He's turned into like the dream big man. He's exactly what like the Celtics dream Robert Williams turning into, of like this like super athletic, powerful guy that can just fly down the court. I mean, you know, he's a big man that can run transition and like couldn't even dribble the ball like 2 years ago. It's insane what he's doing. He's a pretty special, spectacular piece that they have, and I think he's operating in a way that like the Celtics just don't have a third guy that's quite operating at that level, where he's playing elite defense and he's able to get you buckets and create transition for you whenever you want. It's like he's doing kind of what Smart's doing, but actually can really score. And yeah. That's that ace in the hole that they have. And then
They got that point guard Van Fleet, who is pretty much what we thought Terry was going to be, but he seems to not have a problem not starting. But
defense.
Van Fleet was great last year. I mean, he was he almost won Sixth Man of the Year last year. He was terrific. So
he really was, and he's just. Yeah. But he's been unlike Terry though, who's fallen off. I wouldn't say fallen off a cliff, but it's been a pretty jarring start. Yeah, exactly. From what he did last year to this year, where Van Fleet has been more consistent for sure.
Yeah,
I'd say Terry's more like that scene at the last Mission Impossible, where like he's rolling off the side of the cliff, but he's still on the cliff. So.
Yeah. Holding on by a tree.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Terry at any moment could, I think if Rozier gets put back in a starter's role, it's probably going to be great. I think he's just a guy that, for whatever reason, needs to be in a starter's role. So
That's why I'm ready to shop him. I think it would help him and help us. I think it would be a win-win. So I mean,
they've taken plenty of calls, and they just haven't gotten a win-win that they're ready for yet.
Yeah, I feel like you would need a veteran like you were talking about a little bit, Derek, there, because like you're saying, I mean, Terry's liked in the locker room. You've seen him messing with Smart and Jalen, and he gets along with Kyrie and all the other guys well. So I feel like moving that just in regards to personality in the locker room could be a little questionable.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But it depends who you bring in. You bring in a sage veteran who can go, Kyrie's right, but also, hey, Kyrie's kind of annoying, guys. Everybody coming out with me, you know, then you have a little bit of a bad cop situation going there. I mean, that's what Horford and Kyrie, I think, are trying to do, the good cop, bad cop thing. And, you know, it's been fun to watch, I gotta say. It's been really, this team's been, people, fans seem to be really pissed off with the way this season's going. I think it's been really interesting. From someone who's chronicling the team, I think it's been really interesting. And I also say that with the, you know, with the optimism that they could turn it around and be an elite team at any moment now. And so I don't think this is some sort of like ring the alarm kind of situation.
Well, that's the frustration, because like we thought that was happening. They won 4 in a row and were like 15-5 in the last 20. And then the last two games against, you know, well, the one in Miami was, you know, third game in two nights, whatever. Yeah. But then to lose in Orlando in a game that you probably should have won. Every time you think they're getting it, they'll lay an egg.
Yeah,
and it frustrates you.
The game before Miami, Indiana, didn't have Miles Turner, but that's one of the best defenses in the league, and it felt like one of the best games of the season for Boston.
I mean, it was, but also Indiana's defense looked like Indiana's defense without Miles Turner. So
yeah, fair
I think we need to, you know, we need to show that some respect.
I like Sabonis. I'm a Sabonis guy.
He was good. He had a pretty solid game that night too. Yeah,
he's not as defensively. Miles Turner is a great defensive player. His offensive game is, you know, a little limited, but defensively, he's very good.
Yeah, but you mentioned Toronto a lot when we were talking those top teams, and didn't really touch on Milwaukee. I don't know if that was just we cut you off a little bit there, but do you have? I mean, they have a real coach now, and I felt like that was the big difference there. Brooke Lopez somehow became a sharpshooter as their big. And so are you more worried about Toronto, you feel like, than Milwaukee?
It's just because I wanted the podcast to be less than 2 hours. I didn't get into Milwaukee yet. But Milwaukee, you know, they had a whole offseason to build a really good system around Bud. Bud as in, like, drastically reinvented the wheel for them. They're doing a lot of the same stuff that they used to do. But they got Brook Lopez in there, and that was maybe the signing of the offseason. I guess LeBron to the Lakers maybe had some impact on the NBA, but, you know, Lopez is a guy that Boston was definitely interested in. They ended up sticking with Baines, but Lopez, his shooting has kind of revolutionized his career in a way that we haven't really seen anyone who was like a good player, borderline all-star, disappeared, and then reemerged as like a great role player. There's very few guys in the league that have done that. And he's made it happen. He's become a better defender. He's like the perfect cheap budget starting center in the NBA. I don't think there's anyone better than that at this point. And Milwaukee is just, they've hit on so many of these like auxiliary players. You know, Malcolm Brogdon is finally, I think, like locking into who he, like what his role is going to be in the NBA. And he's been great this year. He's only missed like one free throw, right? I mean, that's pretty insane. Wow. And then, you know, all their backup guys are playing really well now. Bud is just doing the same thing that he did in Atlanta a couple of years ago, except that the talent that he has to work with is so, like, it's like working with a singularity here. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Giannis can do every – Giannis is, like, the most dominant player inside of 18 feet that we've seen in forever. So they've managed to put four out spacing around him and give him the space that he needs to just ruin defenses. And that's something that Boston was well-equipped to deal with last year. And – they're still defensively equipped to do it, but their defense has just not been on that level. So I don't see how they pull it off this time. But obviously, there's just, again, caveat, time to change things, that kind of stuff.
So you saw the Marcus Morris, Jalen thing? Is that a whole lot of nothing? You know, is there anything to that? Was that like something that boiled over from the past, or was that literally just a one time? Because it seems Morris was calling out Jalen for his lack of effort on the defensive end against Miami. And, you know, yeah, we've heard murmurs of that, so.
Yeah, and, you know, frankly, I mean, Jalen definitely deserves to be reprimanded for not getting back on defense on that play. But, you know, it wasn't like he literally never ran back on defense. He, you know, he was just, like, pretty late after missing a second-chance opportunity. I thought he was just tired when I saw that play and was just behind the play. And, you know, there's been times that Kyrie literally didn't get back and he just like had his hands on his knees because he was either tired or pissed off or whatever. It happens with some of these guys. I think I've seen Morris do it. So, you know, it's not fair to single Jalen out, but Jalen seems to have been having issues with this kind of stuff more than a lot of the other guys. And Jalen just seems to kind of get a little bit lost and kind of fade into the background when he's out there, and that's been an issue with him for a while. You know, a lot of that I think is because of the role that he serves, but also the way that he plays. And Mook, to his credit, is trying to be the one that says we're gonna have a zero tolerance policy. I'm gonna be the one to call you out. And sometimes Jalen's gonna be like, screw that, and is gonna get confrontational. So I'm guessing Jalen said something to Mook, and you know, maybe it's one of those like shut up old man, don't tell me what to do kind of things. Yeah. And, you know, Mook clearly wasn't having it. You know, and it depends what Jalen said, but Mook was the one that shoved them. And that went from a normal argument to a shove, which is what I think rightfully takes it from the normal argument sphere into the, this is a concern that needs to be looked into and addressed thing. You know, Marcus, it's just like with Kyrie. It's like if Marcus is going to get in people's face, sometimes they're going to react like this. I don't think this is a sign that like these two can't coexist anymore. I think more a symptom of the team not playing well and guys, frankly, being tired of being singled out for it. But I'm watching it. And I'm thinking all these comments that I've been seeing from Kyrie and from the other guys, I think have been pretty accurately reflecting what I'm seeing on the court. So I think it's pretty hard for someone like Jalen, whose response would probably be, I've been trying hard, but like I'm kind of lost out there. I'm trying to find my way. I've been hurt. I'm really frustrated that people keep getting on me. And that's where you see the frustration boil over. But that stuff happens a lot for most teams that are in a competitive situation where they're not thriving. And I mean, we know that Golden State has dealt with stuff like that before. And they seem to be, I think that their seasons have been going fairly well for the last few years. So Boston can certainly overcome this. But if they don't win and they really fall short of expectations, then finger pointing can get a lot more severe. And that's when things become untenable.
Jalen specifically, like I was saying earlier, a lot of his issues I've heard have been confidence based. And do you think that, I mean, he's a smart guy. Does he take that in the way where, you know, frustrated in the moment, but looking back on it the next day, all right, I need to work on this, this, and this. This is, I understand where they're coming from. Or does he hang his head a little more?
You know, that's a good question, because Jalen, if you ask me that about almost anyone else on the roster, I'd probably give you a clearer answer. But Jalen is very mysterious. He doesn't talk to the media a lot. He's, you know, but I've watched him since he was younger, and that's just kind of who he is. He's clearly introverted. He's very introspective as well. I mean, it's not like he's just like running around whistling Dixie or anything like that. Like, he's thinking about all this stuff, and he's trying to constantly improve. But he is someone who is reserved and doesn't seem to be nearly as active in the communication process as the rest of the guys are. And that could be how he carries himself in front of cameras and in public. And he changes a lot behind closed doors. But in my experience with him behind closed doors, he continues to be quiet. And it's not necessarily, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. And it's good to have that kind of balance in the locker room where you don't have everybody being, you know, very confrontational and forward and energetic. You need some of those quiet guys to balance things out and be steady. So, you know, the problem is just like sometimes the guys around you are going to be like, do you care? Are you trying hard? We can't see it on your face the way we can see it on others' face. And we're trying to figure out, are you engaged? Are you a part of this team? And maybe that's the kind of thing that you're seeing kind of boil over a little bit there.
As far as, you know, we had discussed earlier, if the playoffs started now, we would all agree that against Toronto or Milwaukee, the Celtics would probably be an underdog, at least betting-wise. So let's say that, again, I'm playing the what-if game here, which I'm not a fan of, but, you know, just for the sake, you know, we have you on,
that's fine.
I might as well ask you. They get bounced, let's say they do get bounced in the second round to a higher seed, with the expectations what they were, do you think that Danny, well, obviously Brad's safe. I don't want to be one of those people. I can't stand those people. But,
Anthony,
I mean,
Davis, question?
Anthony Davis or some type of move? I mean, obviously re-signing Kyrie is probably first on his agenda. But other than that, do you think that they go out and try to trade for a superstar? Or, I mean, obviously if KD's a free agent, I think they at least try to have a conversation with him. I think every team will. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's fun. It's fun to talk about and dream, but with that being said, do you think that they'll make wholesale changes, or do you just go and run it again?
Well, I think Anthony Davis is an objective regardless of what happens. They could probably win the title and still want to trade for Anthony Davis, and they probably should. So,
AKA the Warriors.
Yeah, I don't think that changes anything. The Warriors showed why you should be trying to do that. And so I think the interesting question would be, Let's say Jaylen Brown continues to play like this, and Tatum continues to kind of play the way he's playing, which has been pretty good, but not quite as good as he hoped. Let's say Jaylen is not enough, and you have to trade Tatum, which has come up again because of the Cedric Maxwell Fett story about Tatum saying, I would trade myself for 82. Would you be willing to trade both of those guys? Because that's where you're making a compromise beyond what you initially were expecting, and you're putting your franchise's entire eggs into the basket of AD re-signing. And that's a little bit risky.
Man, that's a big, cause no picks, just those two, or are we talking picks?
You're
talking two top 10 picks with Sacramento and Memphis. I mean, potentially.
Not, necess- Not necessarily. They could.
No, I mean, they got to draw the names, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, and we're not really, you know, people aren't very optimistic on the back end of the lottery right now. But, I mean, there's still some good talent out there. But, you know, if you're trading both of those guys, then you don't, then I don't think they would need to give up the picks. And they definitely shouldn't, because they're going to need those picks to restock the rest of the roster. So maybe, you know, I think you try to trade those picks for another good young veteran if you can find one, you know, something like that. But you're not, you're not, if you're throwing in Tatum and Brown, I think that beats out.
Man,
Tatum. I feel like we have the depth, and you kind of dream of Tatum turning into an Anthony Davis level talent. So if you're able to keep those draft picks also, and you get to add, like you're saying, you can swap them for a veteran and another guy to bring around, we have the depth where we could give up those two guys for the level of Anthony Davis. I might pull the trigger on that one.
Well, do they have the depth? That's the thing, is I don't know if they do anymore.
Exactly. Those are the two young studs. And then they've got Marcus Smart, who is a very good player, but is he a superstar? I mean, no, but he's a guy you win with. So I am very pro Marcus Smart. I don't want to come off negative there, but he's let's just be honest. He was one of the Nets picks, and he is, he's very good, but he's not a superstar. Let's just be real here. So I think Tatum has superstar potential. Jalen, star potential maybe. If we're, I don't know if he, it's so hard to say when they're this young, but for Davis,
Tatum's potential Anthony Davis potential?
I think he could definitely be a top 10 player, and he's, you know, he's long. He's very long. He can play. He's a wing position player too, whereas Davis is more of a five, even though he can play 4 or 5. But, you know, when I think of Davis, I don't think of a wing player. When I think of Tatum, I think of a very long wing player who has offensive moves that, you know, remind you, you know, of a young Kobe. So this is tough for me. I'm big on Tatum. I know he hasn't been, you know, as good this year as maybe a lot of people thought, but he's still been very good. He's 20, so, boy.
I guess the argument also, I feel like, is that Anthony Davis might make you, you could say he makes you better, but at the same time, I feel like keeping Jalen and Tatum is still enough to get you a championship, a couple.
So what are you saying, keep them or trade them?
I guess I made the argument for both. I'll go keep them.
All right, so my ideal situation would be Jalen in a package with some picks. You know, I'm not opposed to trading picks. I'm not opposed to trailing Jalen if you throw in Williams, because they might want a big man back, you know. And then you got to make the salaries work too. So that's where you'd have to bust out ESPN trade machine there. But, you know, with all things being equal, I don't know, man. Tatum, A, he's on a rookie deal. So you got control for, you know, years to come. You know, when Hayward's possibly gone, when Horford's possibly gone, you know, Kyrie might be, you know, he's still a very good player, but he's not going to be necessarily in his prime anymore. That's Tatum time. So I don't know. This is tough for me. I'm trying to think long term and not just short term. But, you know, in 5 years, is AD still going to be a top 5 player? Probably, but he does have some injury history. So I don't know. This is a toughie.
So I think we agree that Tatum's potential is really high. Does it more so ride on where you think Brown ends up being?
I think that's where it is, really. It's because, you know, even Tatum agrees you should trade him for Anthony Davis. So
he's being humble. He's being a good boy. He's a good kid.
But it's true. And I've always thought it's kind of ridiculous that people don't agree with it. It was a lot harder based on what was happening last year to do it than it is now. But like, AD is in his mid-20s and is already elite. I have some qualms about AD, but he still is worth the trade. So the question is, where do you value Jalen right now? And what's good is that right now, while his value isn't, like, right now he doesn't project to be a clear all-star the way that he did coming into the season. But they have the rest of the season to figure it out. So, you know, it's too early to answer that question now. But if this whole season goes pretty poorly, then maybe you are willing to part with them at, you know, together if you're not including any other compensation. And of course, it's purely based on what other offers are out there. So it really means that Ben Simmons would have to be on the table for them to want to make that offer.
Yeah, I've heard that one too. And I, you know, so who was it? Brendan, was it you that said last podcast about some was it the ex GM of the of Philadelphia saying he Butler and Simmons he predicts won't be on the team next year? So obviously trading Simmons for a superstar like an AD, and then just Butler leaving.
I did hear that, but that was not me that said that.
All right, yeah, because I don't know what the source was on that, and I thought it was somebody from Philly.
I think David Griffin said that he thought that the former Cavs GM said that he thought that Jimmy Butler wouldn't be there next year.
Yeah, and I had heard, this is all he said, she said at this point, but you know, that also they had said Simmons too. They predict will be gone. So you know, your scenario, if you're Philadelphia, would it's kind of the same thing, except you know, people are a little higher on Simmons than Tatum, even though Tatum can shoot. I know, not to harp on that, but I mean, do you think anybody could top that offer of Simmons?
No, Simmons is a better trade prospect than Tatum, I think. So, you know, the thing with Philly is that having AD together with Joel Embiid, I don't think would be a good fit. I just don't see how their offense would work that way. Yeah. At the same time, Simmons is probably just as difficult a fit with Joel as AD is, and they're making it work. Actually, that's not true. I think AD is probably a more difficult one just because AD is also a post-up style player. So I don't really see how they make that work. And there's a certain limit to what you can do as far as putting, you know, super talents together and you know, being confident it'll work itself out. Because right now in the NBA, teams are just not successful with two bigs. It's really, really rare. And so I don't see how they could make that happen, especially the way that those two guys play their game. It would take a massive change for one of them and how they play it, probably AD most likely. So I just don't see it making sense for Philly. And Simmons, like, if Simmons just develops, like, a 12-foot touch, enough of a touch that defenders just have to pull out a few feet out of the paint on him, and just that they don't need to hide him in the fourth quarter, he would be an MVP, borderline MVP candidate, probably right now if he could even do that. So the potential for him is so significant. It's more significant than Tatum. I think Tatum's potential to reach, you know, elite status is probably a little bit higher than Simmons, but Simmons' ceiling is definitely the highest of anybody.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think I agree. Simmons definitely has a higher trade value than Tatum right now. But yeah, it's always fun to talk the AD trade scenarios and who or what could top the Celtics-Tatum offer. And, you know, Philadelphia comes to mind. Another team I always thought, I haven't heard this anywhere, but, you know, I mean, if the Knicks just decided to trade Knox, Porzingis, and a pick for him, and then try to sign KD or whomever, I mean, do you think that that's reasonable, or is that just me, you know, grasping?
I've never heard that proposal. It's an interesting one. Right now, with Porzingis seemingly continuing to be out for the year, and it being completely mysterious, I would have no interest in acquiring him.
Tanking.
So, yeah.
Well, that's why I threw Knox in there, because Knox is a pretty good young scorer. I mean, he kind of reminds me of Tatum.
Yeah, he's a really good talent. I would definitely be very interested in it. I would much rather have Tatum and Brown or just Simmons or maybe even the Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma package. I would rather have those than have to take on Porzingis, who actually Porzingis is going to be a free agent this offseason, so I don't think they can even do that anyway, which is probably why I haven't heard that one. But maybe there's some sort of sign and trade possibility there that I don't know about.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know. It's just trying to think of teams that I could, you know, top. If again, it's essentially if, you know, New Orleans just decides we got to trade this guy. You know, they missed the playoffs this year, which they're on pace to do. And, you know, the writing's on the wall that he's going to walk. You know, they have to move him. Who can top the Celtics package of Tatum and, you know, potentially Jaylen? But, you know, you're pulling at my heartstrings with Tatum, man. Well, that's tough for me.
Touching the Laker one a little bit there, what do you feel like is a better package comparing Kuzma Ingram to Tatum Brown?
Right, that's such a difficult one. I mean, I thought that Tatum was the best prospect of between like those two groups. I would have ranked it coming into the year: Tatum, Ingram, Jaylen, Kuzma. Kuzma has been much better than Jaylen has so far this year. I mean, the one concern is Kuzma is showing that he's a good scorer, but I'm just trying to figure out like what else can he bring to the table as a four? Can he play make at all? Is he going to be a good defender? Can he stretch to five? I don't know if he can do any of those things. Jalen, at least, has been in the past a really good defender. And to him, like, he was turning into a potentially like Klay Thompson level defender. And this year, it just really slipped. But that could be just because he's out there with a different. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons there, but his progression to being a really good two-way player, a minor league version of Kawhi Leonard, is definitely not as clear of a projection as it was entering the season. So, right now I might have Kuzma at the same level as Tatum right now, but probably not. And then Ingram, Ingram's had a very up and down year. I like Ingram's playmaking ability to put him just, at the same level as Tatum and maybe even a little bit ahead of Tatum. Tatum's proven to be a better scorer, I think, for the most part than Ingram. But Ingram has shown that he can run pick and roll at 6 foot, 40, whatever the hell he is at this point, 6'11". Ingram's a bit of a unicorn, which doesn't really get talked about enough outside of LA, but he's more of a unicorn, while Tatum is like your prototypical three.
So in Ingram, he hasn't been very efficient though, and in his 3-point shot, what's he at, like 30% for the year or something? So
yeah, that's been the big issue.
I'm not as bullish on Ingram. Kuzma I like, but he is just a scorer. I don't think there's much more he brings. And on that team with LeBron out, Kuzma's been putting up a lot of his numbers. He did put up some numbers with LeBron there too, but he's really put up some big numbers with LeBron gone. And my question is, if Tatum was in a situation like that, you don't think he could put up the same type of numbers and do the same stuff?
We saw Tatum last year as a primary scorer, and he was dropping 20 a game as a rookie in the playoffs, where it's much harder to score. So, his numbers would be way better if he was on a team where he was a primary option. Right now, he's like the third option.
Cool. All right. Well, I know you said you got to get going here, so we do appreciate you coming on. You can catch Jared on The Athletic. Thanks for coming on Celtics Pulse, man.
Yeah, thank you very much, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys.